traditional data center panel. To my right, we've got Sherif Metwali, Chief Financial Officer with Vantage Data Centers. Been with the company for a number of years. We're going to have everybody give kind of a brief introduction. And then to my left is Alex Astua, the Chief Revenue Officer of Keyyo Networks, one of the larger data center platforms in Mexico. And then we have Rangu Salgam, Princeton Digital Group, a Asia platform that's growing quite rapidly. We are not able to have Prashant from AirTrunk join us. Got sick on his way in, so he's in Denver, but unable to join us, unfortunately. And then Tesh had a flight snafu from Johannesburg. Tesh Durvasula, Chief Executive Officer of Africa Data Centers, and known to many of you, is also the former CEO of CyrusOne. So with that, why don't we start with you, Tesh, and see if the audio works, you can give kind of a brief background about what you're up to these days. Welcome.
Sure. Well, first, thanks, everyone. Thank you to RBC for having us, and thank you, Jonathan. ADC, Africa Data Centers, is the largest Pan-African data center provider. We're operating in four countries right now: South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, and Togo, with expansion plans to get to 10 data centers within 10 countries by 2025. We've got over $500 million of capital through various international and domestic, U.S. domestic funds, such as the IFC. And so we're well-funded and ready to accept both large African enterprises, what we call the Africa 500, and, of course, what everyone knows as the hyperscalers. Thank you, Jonathan.
Great. Sherif.
You guys hear me okay?
Oh, yeah. Everybody gets a mic. Sorry.
Sherif.
Wally, Vantage Data Centers CFO. I have been with the company 4 years. In that time frame, not because of me, but we've grown from one country, two markets, now to five continents, 12 countries, 18 markets, and 26 campuses. So North America, EMEA, and APAC, as some of you heard on Jackie's panel earlier. Business is going well. We're seeing, we're focused 100% on hyperscale cloud providers, large deployments, and just growing with our customers.
Alex, welcome.
Hi, everyone.
You're good.
Yeah. Good morning. Not sure. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Alex Astua, Chief Revenue Officer from Keyyo Networks, headquartered in Mexico. I live in Mexico. I came with a regular passport. I entered fine. We have 40-plus data centers across the region, LATAM region. We have the largest retail market in Mexico, primarily as the company's headquartered in Mexico, but we have also a presence in Central America and Spain as well. So we have a very large retail ecosystem, the largest pretty much in the region. Right now, we have been recently acquired by an infrastructure fund called I Squared Capital. We are wrapping up our roadmap, pretty much focused towards the LATAM region. Clock is ticking, so we're very excited to launch and increase our footprint. So thank you very much, guys.
So there are more chairs along the side for those of you that are standing that want to sit. Rangu, welcome.
Thank you, John, for having me here. Good morning. I co-founded and I run the company Princeton Digital Group. We are Singapore-headquartered Pan-Asia data center operator. We got founded about a little over 4 years ago, and in that period, we've been able to grow in five countries. We have a portfolio of 20 data centers, totaling over 600 megawatts. 10 of them are in operation, 10 data centers, and 10 in various stages of development. Five countries include Singapore, where we have a data center we acquired from IO as an entry point. We have six data centers in China, four data centers in Indonesia, and Japan and Mumbai, India were the most recent that we announced last year. We're building a 100-megawatt campus in Tokyo and a 48-megawatt campus in Mumbai, which is our market entry in these two countries. So five countries, 600 megawatts or so, and growing rapidly across these markets. We'll enter a couple of other new markets in the next year or so. From capital perspective, we've been backed by Warburg Pincus from very early on when we got founded. We have teachers come in, Ontario Teachers Pension Plan. And most recently, we did a $500 million round led by Mubadala. So we have raised nearly $1.5 billion or so in equity by these three investors. So that's kind of privately held still.
Great. I think we're going to do a kind of a mini deep dive around the world and Rangu, kind of continuing with you. India, obviously a market where Digital Realty and Equinix have had, and Iron Mountain have had kind of recent market entry, each with kind of a different strategy. Maybe give us a flavor for number of megawatts in place, what's going on in terms of hyperscale demand, self-build versus leasing trends, metros that are growing the fastest, and so forth.
India is relatively still at an early stage of cloud growth. We saw a first wave of cloud coming in about 5 years ago, and now is really the massive growth that we are anticipating, and already market is happening over 25-30% growth year over year. From a location perspective, in India, Mumbai and Chennai continue to be the two primary cities for multiple reasons. Mumbai is the commercial capital of India and has a large submarine cable landing stations coming from the west, from Europe and Middle East. And Chennai being a major hub for submarine cable going to Asia and Pacific out. So those two cities have become a major two cloud hubs, and we continue to see the growth coming in. We have gone into Mumbai. We will be doing something in Chennai in the coming year. So those are two big hubs. From a market install capacity perspective, it's still relatively small. We believe it's less than 0.5 gigawatt of market deployment, but we see over the next 3 to 5 years, this is going to cross probably 3 gigawatts across the market. So a tremendous growth coming. There's still a supply constrained market from a macro perspective. There are certain sites, locations could be challenging for various reasons, but the overall supply constraint in the market gives tremendous opportunities to invest in at the right locations.
So what's driving this this growth trajectory? Is there anything structural going on around data sovereignty, data localization, or is it just the natural growth that one would see from companies like Meta and the cloud providers?
Yeah, John, we see largely being driven by the data needs. Essentially, just the confluence of all the major trends in India coming together, which is the economy continues to grow 6-7% a year, which is now driving a lot of enterprises to start adopting cloud in a much more serious way. So it's a massive cloud adoption, which has just started. Second, mobile. So the last 5 years with major operators like Jio and Airtel and others, you've seen now close to $1 billion of smartphone users. So that's driving tremendous usage when it comes to delivery and online services and so on. And then you have government, which is being a big proponent of digitization and driving a lot of government subsidies and other government programs through digital means to the hands of the population. So these are 3-4 big macro trends which are all driving towards massive data creation and need for cloud, and in turn needing our business requirements, data centers, and large capacities.
And then in terms of the folks that are adding capacity that have active developments underway, there's some of the newcomers like Digital Realty and Equinix that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Iron Mountain bought a small platform. And then you have the incumbents, I would consider, NetMagic and Control-S and SCT to be incumbent. Are they all growing ratably relative to their existing scale, or do you see newer platforms kind of over-indexing in terms of the development pipeline?
Yeah, a couple of things in Asia across, whether it's India, China, Indonesia, or even Japan. The nuances of getting things executed on the ground is tough. So one of the most important things that customers look for is the ability, track record of execution across these markets. And I think that's becoming more and more important. Some of the newer entrants coming in have some ways to go in terms of ability to prove on the ground a project to success and be able to deliver to customers on time and so on. So I think that is the phase that we're seeing in India right now. Secondly, there's two sides to this market. One, first of all, on the macro level, we know that this is not an industry which winner takes all. So almost in all geographies or cities, there are at least 3 to 4 operators who emerge as key players. So in Asia, what we're seeing is in all the large markets, there are a couple of local operators who have emerged, and then 1 or 2 MNC kind of operators coming in, where PDG, Princeton, is differentiating itself as a pan-Asia operator in these markets, where we've become the kind of the de facto emerged as a leader, as a pan-Asia operator. And that's helping us to create a differentiated value to our customers who are expanding across Asia, simultaneously. Whether it's in China, Japan, or India, the making investments and a single operator gives an ability for them to move fast as well. So I think there's room for others to come in, but at the end of the day, it'll be execution that matters for the customers across markets.
I'm going to let you catch your breath because I'm going to ask about China when I call on you next. But for the sake of saving your vocal cords, let's talk a little bit about Mexico and the regions where you operate and kind of similar megawatts in place. What are you seeing in terms of demand? A lot of new folks in Querétaro, for instance, some real projects, some that are kind of in various phases. But how would you kind of talk about the market structure?
Yes, of course. So we're seeing a lot of demand. So right now the market is pretty hot. We are seeing a lot of new competitors coming in. This is driven primarily due to data kept in the country, data sovereignty. That's a regulation that has been locally for years, but however, right now it's being enforced. There's particular deadlines. And for one particular hyperscaler offering the cloud, this public for Microsoft particularly, he has the largest customer. It's the local IRS hosted in Azure. So they received a deadline and they started building new data centers, multiple megawatts there. However, right now, the main challenge is power. So right now they're struggling pretty much. The next one came, it's started coming in. However, still that only increased the situation and put more pressure into lots of companies trying to get power. Space is not an issue. It's much easier to get that space. However, in that particular case, since a long time ago, we start seeing things moving in. We prepare ourselves right now. We have been able to get enough power. We are hosting currently the first productive cloud in the region. We just signed for the second hyperscaler cloud deal coming in. It's going to be that pretty much was able to beat the other in the time to market race. So fortunately, we were able to get that. But right now, we're struggling as well, trying to build as fast as possible. But supply chain constraint is not allowing us to build as fast as possible. So since the past, we have been focused, as mentioned, in the retail market. Right now, we're shifting a little bit, keeping the retail market very healthy, ensuring that particular ecosystem continues to grow, continues to be attractive. That's one of our main differentiators. However, adding right now in the strategy, the wholesale focus, that's part of our strategy. We are seeing a lot of trends coming in. Querétaro, as mentioned, John, it's in a much smaller scale. It's like the Ashburn, Virginia, but much smaller right now. That city is particularly approximately 120 miles up north from Mexico City. It's in the center part of Mexico. So that can be able to ensure low latency or good enough latency in the country pretty much everywhere. However, Mexico City continues to be one third of the economic potential of the country. We have a lot of presence there. We have a lot of data centers. We started in Mexico City. Then we started expanding. We were the first ones in Querétaro. We're building our second site in Querétaro. We're adding additional sites in different parts of the country as Monterrey, which is just south of the Texas of the U.S. border as well. In Mérida near Cancun, we are adding also additional data centers because some subsea cables coming in and also some additional subsea cables coming in from the Pacific. So we're adding data centers as landing stations and some potential large deals as well. So we're seeing a lot of movement for Central America, Panama as well. It's we have same situation, subsea cables coming in from hyperscalers, so that's becoming a hot area. Guatemala, even though that it's a small country, we're seeing a lot of movement as well from hyperscalers, a lot of communications from there. And so pretty much overall, very strong market, a lot of drivers there, a lot of focus from the hyperscalers. In some particular countries or cities, we are adding additional data centers that we know that there is enough demand. In some other ones, we are catching up to the demand. We're chasing it pretty much. So fortunately, the struggle again, supply chain constraint, costs increasing, and that puts some pressure into pretty much the overall pricing, even though that we try to keep it and maintain ourselves static from the pricing perspective, but still this situation doesn't help, right? So good thing demand is there. A lot of competitors coming in as from the retail side, from the wholesale side, from the hyperscaler side. But I think that's enough market, enough demand and business for everyone.
Great. And then I think I want to open it up to audience questions if there's anything that that Rangu touched on, you know, specifically on India, which is just a huge opportunity, or what Alex has talked about with Mexico. If there's anything that you're kind of burning to ask before I move on, make yourself visible. And if not, I guess one more for you, Alex, and that is just, you know, as you look at Digital Realty, you know, through a JV company, and then Equinix through M&A, what's kind of your observation of having multinationals now active in the market? Are they driving demand from their own customer bases? How do you kind of navigate that competitive environment?
Yeah, so things have changed. Competition have noticed the high demand that is building up. In particular, right now in Mexico, overall in Latam, but Mexico, it's the second largest economy of the region. So, for example, let me try to split it up. Hyperscalers, we have been working with them since a few years back. We host all the U.S. large hyperscalers in the rest of in the competition. So. For example, as mentioned, the case of Equinix has came in, has a strategy pretty much similar as Kio Networks. In our case, we were born as the first and only carrier neutral data center. That was at a time our secret sauce pretty much, because compared to the rest of the competition that was local, they were pretty much carriers, right? The one that has 50 plus market share, Telmex, down in Mexico, which they had a data center and not enough carriers in there, because they do not make their life for the rest of the carriers much easier. Equinix bought Axtel Alestra, another carrier. Right now they're building their ecosystem. I think that we can be able to coexist very easy in the market right now, as demand is very hot, a lot of business coming in. The typical financial and hyperscalers design, they have at least two data centers for high availability for DRP solutions. So I believe that there's enough market. Also, as well, CDNs are coming in very aggressive with large deployments as well. So we are seeing a large number of OTTs also establishing in the market. So in terms of competition, as of today, I wouldn't see the struggle mostly from the competitive side, but mostly from the power side, in which so much demand coming in, not enough power, and those happy problems which are not so happy, right?
So power constraints, I think, Rangu, you can sort of talk about that, as well as Sharif, given some of the markets we operate. We can kind of talk more thematically shortly, but Tesh, I guess over to you for kind of a similar overview. Maybe focus on Nigeria and South Africa, where again, you know, Digital's made investments in both markets, and then Equinix has done one in Nigeria. Obviously, the two largest economies. What's your positioning? How do you view the market structure there, the market opportunity, and then we can go from there.
Sure. Thank you again, Jonathan. So let me just go macro level first. So Ranju talked about India. Well, Africa is about the same size in terms of opportunity. You look at 54 countries in the next 5 years, the population will be 1.3 to 1.4 billion. And the largest part of that population will be around 350 to 400 million people, which is roughly the size of all of the EU. And slightly bigger than the United States. That average population, or that population's average age, is going to be 19 to 30. That is the largest part of the population. So you think the same thing. U.S. population in the next 10 years is average age is going to be like 58 to 60, and if you go to Europe, it goes to like 63 to 70. So you've got North America and Europe are aging populations. Africa is a youthful population. And I've termed this group the restless youth of Africa. They do not want to do things the way their parents and grandparents did them. There are more services now coming online through your phone, through your iPad, through your laptop than ever before. And this requires digital infrastructure. So let's talk about the each market specifically, or the macro opportunity around the continent. What you're seeing, what digital did was probably spend their highest cost per megawatt ever bought in South Africa with its acquisition of Teraco. Bill's a really responsible fiduciary for digital shareholders. So I don't think he did this because he wanted to overspend. He did it because he saw the opportunity. Now, depending on which group you look at in terms of data research, they're claiming that there's going to be somewhere between 600 and 700 data centers required, and that there's going to be about a gigawatt of power over the next 5 years. Now, the one thing that we have done as an industry on both sides is we've underestimated the demand. So and we've done that in North America, we've done that in Europe, we've done that in the Asia Pac region. We're spectacular at underestimating the demand side. So if you believe that, then my guess is those both numbers are probably low. It's probably going to take more than 600 to 700 data centers to take care of the Africa demand. And it's probably going to be well over a gigawatt of capacity. So that brings me to the major markets. South Africa has got three major markets, or three major countries that take care of the continental GDP. That's South Africa, Egypt, and Nigeria. Those three are the biggest, but there's lots of others. And so Nairobi, Casablanca, these countries are also, Morocco are also going to be coming up into the next fold. But as you think about what's happened in the industry, the first 10 years of this industry have been pretty simple roadmap, been GDP driven, right? North America, you went to Western Europe, and then you started moving across to other markets. This next phase is going to be population driven. Okay. If you think of a city like Lagos, 20 to 24 million people, depending on which consensus you want to look at. But 24 million people, of which the average age is 19, you can look on buses, you look on trains, everyone's looking down at their phone. So they're yearning for digital content. Nairobi, large city, another 10 million people, right? Africa's got, I believe, 51 or 52 cities of over a million people. The United States has got roughly 10. They believe that they're going to have 10 cities with over 10 million before in the next 5 years, and three cities over 20 million. So if you believe those trends in population, I think India and Africa are probably the two areas that are going to be seeing the fastest growth in our sector over the next 10 years.
Anything around market entry strategy, what you've seen some of the multinational peers do, your company, how do you tend to kind of pursue those opportunities, M&A versus greenfield versus other?
Sure. So from the hyperscaler perspective, they've all touched base with a couple of racks, somewhere, and some have got multiple megawatts in some markets. South Africa probably being the biggest. There's lots of opportunity. You know, Egypt is still a government-run telecom, you know, Egypt Telecom, or Telecom Egypt. And so trying to get a foothold there is going to be, you have to deal with the government. Some of these things and some of the obstacles that you see across these countries are not exactly what you deal with in North America and Europe. And so they have to approach it carefully. There is no strict or continental GDPR or data sovereignty or data protection rules yet in the continent of Africa. As those get more mature, we'll start seeing bigger hyperscale deployments. But my guess is those are all going to get answered over the next 2 to 3 years. How we're approaching it is, I mentioned it in my preamble. We're looking to get into 10 countries over the next 3 years. So that's adding 3 more countries per year. We're focused on both GDP and on the Africa 500 and on the population. So if after those first 3 countries, you know, then you think about Senegal, you would think about Morocco. Casablanca is a city that's got over 75 to 80 of the African 500 companies. And as we know, the enterprises still drive a lot of business in any area. If you look at our history, New York City was one of the largest data center markets for a long time because of the banking and enterprises that were present in New York City. Same thing in London, same thing in Frankfurt. You know, that is going to repeat itself in Africa. And as Rangu said, you know, Mumbai and Chennai are the areas, not only because of the subsea cables, but because of the business and the commerce that are happening there in India. And we've got 2 major cable systems going on. And I think everyone saw the Lomé landing that Google had. Lomé is in Togo. And so that's only the western half of the continent. And there's another cable system that's going around the entire continent that's also being sponsored by Hyperscaler.
Great overview. And maybe, so Sharif, maybe dovetailing briefly on Africa, South Africa, but then maybe more focusing on major European flat markets. We could spend the whole time with any of you, really, but why don't you kind of provide a perspective on your African strategy and then focus on the journey that you've had initially in Santa Clara, then Nova, elsewhere.
Sure. So Africa in particular is a market where, in South Africa, is a market where our customers, you know, basically suggested that they needed capacity. And part of, you know, our growth strategy is around a very close symbiotic relationship with each of the hyperscalers in planning and development, right? Where do they potentially need capacity? Where can we be? Where can we help them deploy that capital and that capacity as quickly as possible? There was a point made earlier about, you know, the growth in the sector. And so if you step back and just look at the hyperscalers, right, they're growing somewhere between 30 and 50% a year on a compound annual basis. What does that really mean? That means they're going to double the capacity that they've deployed cumulatively, right, over time in either 2 or 3 years. And so, you know, they are seeing an unbelievable amount of demand on their end, and they need our help to grow, right? They're continuing to build on their own. They can't do it all by themselves. And so they're looking to third-party providers like us and everyone on this panel to help them grow. We think, you know, the continent of Africa, as Tasha said, is a great opportunity. We've dipped our toe into South Africa, and we are looking at other markets. And we did, you know, the same strategy in Europe, right? We started thinking about Europe in late 2019 with a greenfield strategy to enter tier 2 markets. So think of that as, you know, Zurich, Milan, Berlin, Warsaw, with the hope that, you know, we would eventually get into some of the flapped markets. We then found an acquisition opportunity in the UK or in Wales. Largest data center, single data center on the continent in NGD. That helped get us a nice foothold. We bought a small business called Etix, which had a unique parcel of land with power. You've heard the power theme quite a bit. Europe is no different in power being a significant issue, but they had a JV relationship with one of the utility companies and were, you know, started to build a data center. And we've just leveraged that relationship and are continuing to repeat that type of model throughout Europe.
And then maybe focus a little bit on, East West Coast U.S. And Canada. You've made some acquisitions as well.
Yeah. So as I said at the very beginning, in 2017, when DigitalBridge and a consortium of equity investors bought Vantage, we were a two data center market. Right. It was Santa Clara and Quincy, Washington. Quincy, Washington is really a build to suit market. You don't build there speculatively. We then decided to enter the Northern Virginia market, you know, the most competitive market in the world, the fastest growing market, the market with the most demand. And we figured, you know what, if we just get our fair share of capacity, we're going to have a very nice business and we're going to grow that. And it's done probably 3, 4, 5x what we had underwritten from an annual leasing perspective. We then looked at, you know, other markets across North America and decided that, you know, entry into Canada, in Montreal in particular, we found a data center platform that was a part of Videotron, and we were able to buy that and continue to grow that. And we did a second acquisition in Montreal of a company called Hypertech. So one of the things that we focus very much on is, you know, we pick certain markets in each region, and then we establish a footprint, try to grow within that market, and then selectively add other markets across the continent. So we are looking at other markets in North America, but the low-hanging fruit is, you know, you go from one campus in Northern Virginia to two campuses in Northern Virginia to three campuses in Northern Virginia, and it's a great way to just continue to grow with your customers.
So Surreal was at our inaugural conference. I think we held it in Falls Church, Virginia, back 5 or 6 years ago. And again, we had like every continent represented. And he made a comment about Northern Virginia, which at the time was a relatively recent market entry for you. And he talked about building 25 megawatts on spec. So fast forward today, and maybe even last 4 months in Northern Virginia, what have been kind of your observations around market absorption, pricing, and so forth?
So we started the Northern Virginia market in 2017, early 18, and we figured it would take us a good, you know, 6 to 8 years to sell out our first campus. We're done in that market. So, and that was a 169 megawatt campus, and it's been 2.5, 3 years since we've actually built the first data center.
I'm sure the audience will have some questions as well, but maybe just give us a little bit of some quick high level thoughts about recent trends that we've seen. Any noticeable shift from build versus lease preferences on the part of the hyperscalers, or out of necessity? Maybe they're doing some leasing. Certainly, it seems like social networking and cloud and enterprise software have been particularly active in the last short period of time.
Yeah, look, I think across North America and Europe, one of the things that we've seen from several of the hyperscalers is the fact that, you know, there was a major technology shift a couple of years ago where Apple, you know, stopped providing some of the information on mobile devices that other social media companies, other hyperscalers were using. And so in an effort to figure that stuff back out, each of those social media companies have had to deploy massive amounts of AI. And so that's been a huge driver. That has, and I think it was mentioned earlier, right, we've got costs going up from a construction perspective, but we're also seeing significant price stability and actually prices, you know, starting to go up in our favor. You know, you don't do that on a deal where you've already, you know, negotiated, you know, a data center or are in the process, but on any new developments, as our cost per megawatts go up, you know, our starting price for each of those leases is naturally going up.
I'm going to pivot back to Asia, but maybe one last question for you on Europe. A number of the markets, even since you did the Etix transaction, have gotten a lot more crowded. I've lost track of how many new players are in the process of entering Frankfurt. Frankfurt seems to be kind of on par now with London. But as you look at the major markets where you operate or have thought about operating, any sort of observations around demand trends? Does it make sense to expand further in those markets, or is competition getting to a point where you want to be shifting more towards tier two?
So, you know, demand in a tier one market is, I would say, insatiable. The challenge is, can you find a location? Yes. But can you find the power at that location in the tier one markets is becoming increasingly, you know, challenging. And so, you know, a lot of times in tier one markets, if you do find a location, you know, you're negotiating with a customer, not for leasing that comes online next year, but leasing that comes online, you know, 3 years out, right? And that ramps over time. And so you're always going to want to be in tier one markets. There is expansion into, you know, tier two markets as they, you know, continue to grow and have to create new availability zones. And so you're going to continue to see that.
So Rangu, I think two big economies that I think are really important to hit on are China and Japan. You're in both. You entered Japan, Saitama, yeah, I guess relatively more recently. But first, China, maybe give us an overview similar to what you've done for India.
Sure. So China was the first country actually we entered a little 4 years ago. Now we have seven projects with a portfolio of 300 megawatts. Four of those data centers fully operational. Two coming to service in a couple of months into Q4. So we're in a pretty formidable position in China, being the only MNC, multinational company in China at scale. So that gives us two advantages. One, for non-Chinese hyperscalers in China, which is the US, larger US hyperscalers, we are becoming an good alternative to partner with. So that that is becoming a compelling differentiation for us in China. Second, for Chinese hyperscalers, we are being viewed as a MNC at global scale, global standards. So they are expanding very heavily outside China as well, particularly in Indonesia, Singapore, Japan, Korea. And they find us as the only operator they know in China they can go out with. So from both sides, our position in China is playing very well for us as a Pan-Asia operator. And from a scale perspective, we have been able to build very quickly the 300 megawatt portfolio and more to come over the next, you know, 2 to 3 years. And from a market dynamics perspective in China, you have a number of you know, local operators who have done well. And there's a bunch of entrepreneurial-driven operators who came in when there was a massive growth a few years ago. And many of them could not sustain or will not be able to sustain just because the customers, hyperscalers, demand and requirements are getting much stricter. They're narrowing the suppliers so that they don't have a handful of highly qualified, global quality data center operators. Many of the entrepreneurs who may be getting over-leveraged, not getting the right approvals, are having challenges. So what we do in PDG is, you know, we do a lot of homework before we get a site out to market. You know, when we call it secured, we have practically ticked every box that matters for our customers. So whether it's power approval, power connection, China has a lot of nuances. Like every country in Asia has different power challenges. In Japan, it's different. In China, it's different. China, it's a lot to do with local authorities. So we have put a great team in place that is able to execute against those challenges and make sure we get everything right before we get a site announced and start putting our capital to work there. So overall, China market has been very good for us in China, but going outside China as well, as I mentioned, from a China perspective. There's a couple of things that's going on in China that we are keeping a close tab on, which is a supply chain, we're all reading the headlines. Parts of China has been under severe lockdown over the last 2 months in Shanghai and parts of Beijing. So that is impacting a little bit. But if you look back when COVID started, there were early signs of supply chain challenges. And we took some forward calls in Asia, rest of outside China. But China was doing very well because internal and domestic transportation was not hindered in the early days of COVID within China. So we did very well with the supply chain in China. outside China markets, we took a lot of forward calls, and that really played out very well for us. When things really started getting tight, our suppliers worked with us. We had made commitments, and lived up to our commitments on the contracts we placed, and then we executed on those projects. So we came out of that first phase of supply chain almost unaffected and in a stronger position in the market. And in this phase, the impact is a little bit within China. So what's happening the last 2 months with the certain parts of the country, not the whole country, is not in lockdown. You know, we hear a lot of headlines in China, but it's only less than 100 million people who have been impacted with this shutdown. There's another 1.4 billion people in the country still moving around pretty freely. And of course, it depends on where your data center is, where the customer needs are. So we see continued demand. And we have a site outside Shanghai, which is coming out RFS in a couple of months. Tremendous demand. One outside Beijing in Langfang. That's a 66 megawatt site. Tremendous pipeline interest that the market looks very attractive as it did 6 months ago, 2 years ago.
So
go to Japan. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So some operators in China have commented on maybe a little bit of a pivot of demand from hyperscalers to merely large internet companies. So you mm-hmm. have some companies that got started on the cloud. They move off the cloud, have their own colo needs. Mm-hmm. And then regardless of that, there's commitments that have been made over the last couple of years, and the pace of move-in maybe a little bit more measured. Do you see that in your business, or have a perspective to share?
Yeah, I think in China, we saw that a lot compared to many other markets, probably including the US, where the large internet companies had a certain tipping point. They moved from cloud to their own colo. And we saw that happen quite dramatically in China over the last 5 years. And just in the last 2 years as well, as during COVID, e-commerce took off even further. So that's happening. And I think we have been a beneficiary of that, where large commerce companies going cloud, they want a partner they can trust to execute on, because they don't have internal capabilities to run a cloud, run a colo. So that shift, unlike getting a market share from one city to the other city, when you go from in-source to an outsource or cloud to a colo, they want operators that can kind of be handholding them through the transition. I think we saw that was very important, and that demonstrated track record of execution was something that was very important for them in terms of selecting the partners. So we'll continue to see that, John, in terms of large internet companies. It's all about cost. They can bring their cost down by doing their own colo. I think it's making a difference. And the cloud companies themselves, their growth is still coming from large enterprises, and there's new ByteDances, TikToks of the world that's coming out. So there's a large supply of startups that is not going to stop the usage of cloud, and the enterprises, of course, continue to move to cloud.
And then do the customers in China pay attention to whether they're doing business with an incumbent or locally domiciled company versus an MNC like yourself?
Yeah, they do. And this happened to us, the first big win we did in China, where we sold out a whole site for a large hyperscaler. It was driven by the fact that we were an MNC, and we had done small business with them in one of the other markets. And the reason they, at the senior executive level, we were able to pass their, mustard and became a strategic supplier, was the fact that, we are going to be Pan-Asia, their outside China investment is going to go up. And it was important for them to see how PDG could play a role for them for long term. Secondly, being well capitalized was very important. I think Chinese hyperscaler smart, this they've seen over the last few years, there's a lot of capital that were chasing entrepreneurs as small startups, which was either capital was not good or didn't have the right patience to execute through the commitments. And we are well backed, and that has been extremely favorable in our affair. This is not a company which is going to flip overnight. A company now is going to sell a single asset and get out. Multi-country being a long-term player has helped us quite a bit in gaining confidence and winning large business in China.
We have somebody from Chior in the audience, Jonathan Burney, COO, China domiciled company. Any kind of thing, any perspectives to add based on what Rangu has said about China?
Sites, the opportunity to power, and But I think the thing that happens, but you know, nobody's going to say something.
And then Japan quickly, and then we'll move on to kind of broader themes in the remaining short number of minutes we have.
Sure. Japan, as we all know, is a very large economy, if not the second, third largest economy. A lot going on in China. It's been in Japan. It has been a little open market for multinationals to be there. Some of our peers or competitors are there. And for us, it was all driven by our customers. Some of the large hyperscalers, global ones, either from here or from Asia, have been giving us quite a bit of insights into Japan and wanted us to be able to get into Japan. And so over the last 2 years, 3 years almost, we have been looking to action some deals there. And some of the learnings helped us to make some bets appropriately, we believe. Japan, like every other market, has its own power problems. But if you discern, kind of go in and try to understand the geography a little bit more, we were able to learn some things that has helped us to enter Japan with a bang and at a place that we believe there's a tremendous roadmap for further growth for us and for the industry. So in Tokyo, the way it's laid out there's a CBD part of Tokyo, which of course where most of the data centers early on grew. Then there's the eastern part called Inzai, which is in the Chiba district, Chiba prefecture. That has had seen a tremendous growth of data centers over the last couple of years, or 5 years. As we talk to the utilities and try to understand the market 2-3 years ahead, it's going to run out of power. So that helped us to understand where do we go next, where do we create the next cluster. And again, with a lot of insights from our customers, we were able to action a deal, fortunately, in a city called Saitama, which is just north of Tokyo, within still a pretty good distance from the eastern part of Tokyo, which I mentioned, and also a small cluster on the western side that has come up in the past. So this became a very attractive location. And Japan, Tokyo is already a relatively a good-sized market. So we wanted to enter with a scale that mattered to our customers. So we were able to find a site with 100 megawatt upstream capacity guaranteed by the utility. The land was right to be repositioned for a data center. And we brought in a partner to actually help us do the build. We had no presence in Japan. So the entry was through minimizing some of the early execution risk by finding a partner who would do the land acquisition, do some of the early approvals, and do the construction for us, and that's what we're doing. So we're able to enter Japan with a lot more a deliberate approach in the geography of which we want to pick, and also how we minimize our risk by allocating some risk to a partner early on. So that's kind of helped us to move very fast. So now we've got all the approvals, the construction has started, and customers like what we're doing in there. So there's more interest to come into Saitama by other data center operators. As many of us in the room here know, a cluster formation is very important. The first data center operator goes in. And if that is proven to some extent, then everybody else is interested. And here, because upstream power over the next 10 years looks very attractive. And that we were able to do because we had a relationship with TEPCO. They don't give you a long-term visibility until you build a relationship, and which we did over the last 2 years. And finally, they opened up. And we saw the runway that the power in that part of Tokyo over the next 10 years looks absolutely fantastic in terms of for our industry. So we hope others will follow there, which I think we're already hearing some signals of that.
So we can continue that theme with Sharif and others, but let me first see if there's any audience questions.
It's a company called Lendlease. It's Australian headquartered, one of the very large developers.
Yeah. So sustainability question. I think I'll have all of you take a crack at that. But Rangu, you
Sure. Yeah. Thanks. So their customers are demanding, as you know well, I think particularly the U.S. ones, but even the Asian hyperscalers, two things. One, they're being also very realistic in what they are, you know, how much they're imposing on the operators. So they're looking in operators who are taking forward calls, who are being more progressive and aggressive, because they know the challenges in this country. So each of the markets are very different for green power. China has its own, it's a very state-driven green production that's going on. While in India, it's a very dynamic market in the private sector. So much easier to acquire green power in India. And we have been very aggressive in India, for example, getting green power. So customers see that, they know you cannot get it overnight, but if you're taking the right steps, putting some money to work at the same time, they see that happen. Indonesia. It is, yes and no. From a power perspective, in general, the things in this market, what's happening is, if you go to the macro level, every policymaker, start from the government level to policy level, is irreversibly committed to digitization in the countries. So for them, that's like a no way reversing back, whether it's the constituents in a democratic country or policymakers in a, you know, other nations. So given that, all layers of bureaucracy is working very hard with the industry. And that's a big shift over the last 2-3 years than we've seen in the past. Every country in Asia, no matter which country you're in. And that, if you work proactively with the government, pick the right location. So they are powered, like even in Mumbai, the place we are in, Navi Mumbai, where a lot of other data center operators are, that part of Mumbai has very good power. It's good, clean power. There's a lot of upstream coming further over the next 5-10 years. So the government is working with the operator industry to make sure that we do some right, take the right steps. They're being very careful whom they give licenses or approvals these days, and they don't want speculators to come in a way that they don't finish the project or don't get customers in. So that comes back to the earlier China conversation, that the customers, regulators are being a lot more careful in giving approvals. They want to make sure these are operators who will be here for long term, and those factors matter. Now, green, also, again, all these nations have made serious commitments for green. So India has been a serious commitment to, you know, the COP26, the Paris Accord. Singapore, which is where we are based and still a major hub for Asia, has made significant commitments to the COP26 and Paris Accord. They're not backing off. And so they're working with the industry to make things happen in green procurement from Indonesia, from Australia. So there's a lot going on in the industry, in the government level, to green and work with data center operators. So, but these are the challenges, unlike in Ashburn or in Arizona or somewhere in the U.S., if you can solve these problems in these countries, that's why customers are willing to pay or partner with you, because you've crossed a lot of these hurdles, and that's where companies like us are spending the time, energy, building the right team on the ground, that if you can overcome these challenges, customers like a lot, because it's tough to do otherwise.
Hey, Jonathan, I'm just going to add one quick thing. So, you know, sustainability for the customers isn't just about power, right? It's also about water usage. It's about greenhouse gas emissions. So it's a bigger initiative that we're all trying to address and work with the utilities to bring green power where available.
Yeah, Jonathan, I would just add that health and safety is also very important in these markets. Western standard health and safety, as you get into European and Asian and African markets, these are table stakes. You have to have all of these in place before you open your doors or during the construction process. And that's one other aspect to take into consideration.
And then just in Mexico, then when a U.S. Hyperscaler is entering the market or building an AZ, what types of questions are they asking of their vendors around environmental stewardship?
Well, yeah, environmental is a big thing. They're asking to have these agreements in place. From our perspective, we have 95% of our energy is renewable. But it's something that the hyperscalers usually request. In addition to that, besides the energy, it's expansion capabilities. They come in to be there, to establish there, not to be moving around because they cannot grow. So they're looking into ensuring that they can be able to build a pop. And as we're seeing the demand, it's easy to predict. So they tend to request more and more and more. They're not only from space and power perspective, but also if we see the rack density trend, they're moving from 3 kilowatts per rack or something. Right now, they're up to 10 kilowatts per rack. So that's a big difference. And that's they're predicting even more. So that's a big situation. And something in particular that helps us out, or it's a big trend, in particularly Mexico, that used to be not in our favor, was the proximity to the U.S. So currently the proximity to the U.S., it's something that is a demand, a very large demand trend. The Chinese, for example, establishing in Mexico, that they are unclear of the political uncertainty of offering and rendering services directly in the U.S. They're not planning to grow directly. They're expanding in Mexico, putting large pops and offering some services directly to the U.S. and to the Central America region. So Mexico has a privileged geographical position as well.
I think we are going to go into overtime a little bit, given the gap we have with the next panel. But so Sharif, as the lone CFO on the panel, a couple of questions for you around current financing environment, strategies, what are expectations around development returns given higher interest rates, some of the things we talked about with Jackie, but from your perspective, what are your views?
So clearly, to state the obvious, we are in a very volatile market environment right now. Trying to, access capital, you need to think about, the terms that you're able to get. We have long-lived assets. And so, the best thing to do is get long-lived fixed rate debt. And we were very successful in North America in being the foundational data center provider in the securitization market. And that has been, very attractive to us. We started that back in 2018 with our first issuance of about $1.2 billion. We've since done over $5 billion of incremental add-ons through 5 transactions. We're trying to establish that market in EMEA as well. There hasn't been a capital markets-based esoteric data center transaction there. We track interest rates. We track borrowing rates. One of the things that we've done, I think, fairly successfully is try to manage debt maturity stacks. So we don't have too much debt coming due in any one year, so that if we're in a good market environment, we can refinance easily. If we're in a bad market environment, we're not getting hosed by, trying to raise the last dollar in. And then hedging, every once in a while, you have to put a hedge in place, and it's painful, but it gives you certainty on DSCR in particular.
And then just a general comment made on the opening fireside about supply chain, higher costs to develop. It applies to both towers and data centers. But what's happening with pricing? I guess there could be two approaches. One is, for the sake of engendering a long-term relationship with a large set of global customers, you sort of absorb it, or you can increase pricing with the intent to kind of, maintain your development yield targets or even enhance them. But what's kind of your school of thought on how to approach that?
Oh, we're approaching it with maintaining the development yield, right? I mean, our focus is to drive returns for our investors. Our customers get it, right? I mean, they're in the same boat as us. They're trying to grow. They're trying to buy equipment. They're seeing the same, 10 to 15% increases on long lead equipment. They're seeing contractor, prices go up. So they understand, and they realize that, we are a partner to them in terms of them being able to grow their cloud platforms. And so, if they try and squeeze us too much, they're not going to be able to grow the way they want. So they get it. And we're, trying to maintain our unlevered, development yields.
Audience questions. So maybe a final one for everybody. And I guess one is, we talked about the big opportunity. What concerns you the most if things 2 years from now, in terms of negative surprises that you kind of want to avoid, or on the upside, anything that people aren't focused on now that you see as a huge opportunity in the markets where you currently operate. And Rangu, you'll have to talk extra fast given the number of geographies you operate in. And if you could do that as well.
And so what is the last part of your comment?
Well, just sort of sources of surprise that you may see over the next 2-3 years that aren't evident in the current course of business, and any kind of pain points that you're mindful of that you want to avoid.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Should I start?
Yeah.
Thank you. So from an overall perspective, one thing as to echo what Tej mentioned earlier, even in 4 years in Asia, we constantly underestimate the market demand. So I think that's not going to go away in the next 2-3 years, in spite of the volatility in the market, supply chain problems. I think our customers' conversations we're having and the kind of pipeline we're seeing in the next 2-3 years is continue to probably grow faster than even our wildest expectations. So that's a good news. From a challenging perspective, the things that really has been kind of something that we worry about for the next few years is talent. In Asia, we have grown very fast, and as an industry, it's still very new in Asia. And I think there has been a tremendous war for talent in Asia. Companies which have built a little reputation, everybody in my company gets a call from a recruiter. I think 95% of them haven't returned that call, or didn't go after one conversation, luckily. But I worry about that. I think that's going to be a problem for the next 3 to 5 years for talent in this part of the world, in Asia, across all the markets. Whether it's India, China, Japan, it's very difficult to find talent in Singapore. So that's my number one worry, John, in terms of talent. Supply chain was probably the second thing, which also impacting our customers, which we haven't seen yet. But, customers' ability, not in our business, but their servers, systems being able to come on time to our data centers. So get their utilization up and manage our operations at the level of expectations on PUE and those kind of things are important for us. So we haven't seen the impact yet of any of those kinds, but we're keeping an eye that what does it mean over the next year or two if things don't ease up across the market for us, our own procurement, but also customers.
Alex, Tesh, and then Sharif, you'll get the last word. So, Alex.
Okay, so... concerns from the short term, I believe that supply chain is one of the top concerns, which I believe that at some point in time, hopefully, fingers crossed, we see the opposite change. Overstocks, demand starts to build up, and hopefully in 8 months, 10 months or something around that time frame, we can be able to start seeing a little bit of the opposite, hopefully. So, but that's a big concern right now because we have the space, we have the customer, we have the demand, and right now our main concern is to being constantly pushed with very long lead times. I fully agree in terms of the talent. There's not enough people that has the knowledge in the market right now as competition is coming into our markets. It's something that concerns me. I have a couple of managers that they have left already because of that particular reason. And at the end of the day, we need to ensure to have very aggressive plans in terms of compensation to ensure that we can be able to keep the people in there, right? Power as well. It's something that even though that from the KIO Networks perspective, we have prepared ourselves, still continues, if demand continues to increase at that rate, at that pace, it's something that we're going to be continuous. So we need to prepare more. We need to make more commitments. The challenge there, it's that these utility companies are government managed. So that makes the struggle a little bit harder. And we need to depend in one particular that they do the distribution and transmission. So those would be my concerns. So pretty much everything looks good except the habilitation, right?
Over to you, Tesh, maybe focusing, if you can, on Nigeria and South Africa.
Sure. First off, I want to make sure the next panel, I want to sit on your right because Sharif's getting all the airtime. So that's clearly... That's the position A, the RBC panel. So, listen, I think there's a lot of logs on the fire already, but the two I would focus on is power and what's happening to our customers. I believe our customers are going to continue to grow. This recent blip downward in all of their stocks could get people a little concerned. But generally speaking, the hyperscalers are deflationary in nature. You know, if you buy AWS or Azure, you're saving money. So I think they'll continue to grow over the next 10 years and over the short term and the long term. So I think demand's coming. Nigeria and South Africa both have power problems, and they are going to continue to have them. Right now, if you're in South Africa, you are going through what's called load shedding, which for those in the audience, that's French for brownouts. They basically come in and they have programmed times where you have to go to generators because they're taking load off the grid. And you're going to continue to see this in all the markets. And this is not just an African problem. It's a global challenge, right? There has not been a huge there has been a lower investment in the utility grids across the planet, whether you're in London, Frankfurt, Northern Virginia, or Lagos, we're challenged in power. And I think that ultimately is going to be the biggest challenge. And it's also going to be the area that if you can distinguish yourself, all of the panelists here have been able to distinguish themselves in going into difficult markets and securing the power and making it available to our clients, both enterprise and hyperscalers. That will be your opportunity. And to finish off, Jonathan, I still believe that Africa and these markets are where you can get your sized returns. You're with the competition in the tier one markets, both in North America and Europe. You know, there's been margin compression across the board, and now it's opportunity for that same capital to move to other markets like Africa and India.
Well said, Sharif.
I guess since I got the most airtime, I'd say there's two things that I worry about. One is, you know, reputational risk, and not from an operational perspective, because we've been in the business for a long time, but we are growing so fast and going into new markets. When you're developing data centers and you're constructing with, you know, new general contractors, Tesh said it, health and safety is a major focus of our customers, and incidents don't go well with our customers. And you don't want to be that provider where you've got, you know, developers or GCs and you're having incidents in those markets. That's a really bad outcome, and it just hurts your reputation, right? And so that's the one thing. And then the second thing, you know, from a financing perspective, look, capital has been available. People have tried to follow and do things as aggressively from a financing perspective as other providers, I would say Vantage in particular. But their business models are a little bit different. And I worry that someone's going to try and, you know, sell something that doesn't really make sense for their business, not perform, and then screw up the financing markets for all the rest of us.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody, for your time. We went a little bit over, but I think it was well worth it. And
thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, everyone.